Right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Me, Myself and Hopefully You podcast. I'm your host, Tariq, a 19-year-old university student currently experiencing a midlife crisis as he has no idea what he wants to do with his life. So rather than see a career advisor or a therapist, I decided to start a podcast where I invite guests from an array of backgrounds to tell me their story. And whilst finding out about them, hopefully I can find out more about myself too. So if you can relate, or maybe you just want to see where I end up, join me every Sunday right here. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest at this time is a young and up-and-coming actress, director and producer. She's already making her mark on the scene, having co-starred in a feminist web series titled It's a Girl Thing that was highly regarded in over 14 international film festivals. She has travelled all over the world to truly learn what it takes to make it in the acting world, studying in California, France, Philadelphia, and in the prestigious British American Dramatic Academy in London. She also co-hosts her very own podcast, Damsel in the DMs, focusing on dating, relationships, and responding to other people's dilemmas. Please join me in welcoming the lovely and gorgeous Lauren Elizabeth Harris. So, Lauren, I just sort of want to start off with some quick fire questions, just so that the audience can get to know you a bit more. The first question I want to ask is a bit of a random one. What's the last picture on your camera roll?
The last picture on my camera roll. Let's see. You know what it is? It's a sandwich and salad that I made because I'm currently with my dad and my brother, and I was joking that they've been eating like kings here because their refrigerator is so packed with leftovers and all this delicious food because I was in LA for a while. So I just got back to Philadelphia where my brother and my dad are, and I was just laughing at them for having all of this like delicious leftovers in their refrigerator.
Okay. Well, so what was in the sandwich? I mean, it looked like a good sandwich. I want to know what's in
it. It was delicious, actually. It was ham and Swiss with lettuce, onions, mayo, and mustard. And then the side salad was actually what was more interesting, because how often do you get a side salad with a sandwich you made for yourself, you know? That's, but my brother makes Exactly. My brother makes this Greek salad with like no lettuce or whatever, just like the tomato, cucumber, feta concoction. And they just had that in the refrigerator. So I put it over some greens and added some olives. And I was just like really pleased with myself.
I love a Greek salad. I don't know why you didn't put lettuce in. I love a bit of lettuce in Greek salad as well.
I know. Because I guess they were saying that like in Greece, they don't do it with greens. They just do it with like the tomatoes, the cucumbers and the fetas and like the Mediterranean herbs. I added lettuce to it, but they had it just like, you know, the regular condiments. Yeah.
Fair. I mean, I love Greek salad. And just like when you can make a good Greek salad, it's brilliant. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah, it's like,
Feta cheese as well. Oh,
feta. I love feta.
On a salad, it's so, on its own, it's disgusting. But then when you put it on salad, it just makes it like amazing.
I like it all the time, honestly. I could eat it in many different things. I don't know if you heard, but there's like a big trend going on TikTok where people make feta pasta now. And you basically put like feta in the center and then all these cherry tomatoes around and then you heat it up and mix it and like it becomes this sauce and then you put it on pasta and people are
I think
it.
I saw that. Yeah, that did look quite nice. I think I saw that. Yeah, it looks quite nice. I mean, I've got many cherry tomatoes in my fridge as well. I need to get some feta cheese. Feta cheese, it's got calories and I'm trying to reduce my calories. That's the annoying thing.
It's not so bad though. No carbs. So
yeah, it's not the worst thing in the world, I guess. I mean, there is worse cheeses. All right. Okay. So my next question is who would you say is your role model?
Probably my mom.
Okay. And why
she has had to go through a lot in her life. And she's been super successful. She ran for Congress, she was a Fulbright scholar. She's a PhD. She taught political science for like over 20 years. She cares a lot about activism and social justice. And she's also just been an incredible mom. So, definitely her.
I mean, from that, I can understand sort of, your bio that I read, there's a lot of sort of activism, social activism in things like feminism and LGBT issues, which we'll get onto later. And you said that she ran for Congress.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing for people that don't know what Congress is. It's like the House of Parliament, running for the House of Parliament, essentially trying to be an MP, which that is crazy. That's pretty. Is she still trying to do that, or has she sort of
to stop running for it.
She still wants to be in politics, but I think more working on other people's campaigns now than her own.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. All right. I mean, maybe you should do it. Maybe you should run as campaign manager. Could be quite interesting.
Yeah, I have to be careful what I say in all these podcasts then, well, you know, exactly. If I ever want to do that.
Exactly. This would be the perfect. You need to say somewhat controversial here, then become the next Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, and then I can cancel you. It'd be brilliant. I'll get the exposure, and then it won't be good for you.
But wow, so right. I should just X out of this meeting now.
Exactly. No, don't do that. Don't do that. Next, my final question is, maybe this is the question that will bring controversy, is if you could only, say if there was a house fire and everyone was saved, but you could only save one item, what would that item be?
I have a stuffed animal that when I was 4 years old was like meant to hold me over until I got my first dog named Puka. And it's like the dog from Anastasia. I don't know if you're familiar, the like little gray looking dog. So it was a stuffed animal that looked like that. And I still have it, still love it. That would be the object.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's quite cute then. All right, fair enough. I mean, okay, yeah. Oh, it's interesting, that one. Before I sort of get into my own questions, if you don't mind, could you just sort of introduce yourself to the listeners?
Absolutely, sure. So my name is Lauren Harris, and I'm an actress, writer, producer, and director in the LA area. I also host a podcast myself called Damsels in the DMs. And just a hanging in during the pandemic, trying to continue making art for a purpose. And I grew up in the Philadelphia area. That's where I am right now. And moved to LA when I was about, I guess, 17 or 18 to go to the University of Southern California, where I double majored in acting and Spanish.
Wow. So, being American, I always find it's really weird. I always find it so interesting because America's sort of everywhere, and it's like it's all in all on all TV shows. To hear someone that's from America and to say, oh, I've been to Philadelphia and LA and all that sort of stuff, I can't wait to be able to travel. I mean, you sort of mentioned the pandemic. We're all sort of trying to just get through it right now, but I can't wait to go to America, try American food, get a Philly cheesesteak. I've heard it's the best thing, is it?
Philly cheesesteak, yeah. I can make them pretty well too.
Oh, can you?
Yeah.
Is it as good as everyone says it is? Oh, everyone.
They're better than what everybody says they are.
That good, yeah. Oh, yeah. What's the best place that you can get it from?
Okay, very controversial statement. If you're so Pat's,
this is the controversial
Gino's
one.
Yeah, this is what I'll get in trouble for. The Pat's and Gino's are like the two quintessential cheesesteak places that people go to, you know, like have the touristy sort of cheesesteak. Mm. I think Pat's is significantly better than Gino's because it's the more like local family owned thing. However, I think if you go into the suburbs, you can get better cheesesteaks.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll keep that in mind for when I go to Philadelphia because I can't wait to try it. I salivate when I look at American, like from New York pizza, you know, Philly cheesesteak, that sort of stuff. I can't wait. And the portions are huge as well, which is great for me. Oh, huge. I can't wait. Yeah, I cannot wait.
So where are you in the UK right now?
Yeah. So I'm okay. Right now studying in Reading, which is near London. But I'm okay, from cool. Manchester, which is further north. You might not have heard of Manchester, or you might have, I don't know.
I know of it. I lived in London for a little bit because I studied at the British American Drama Academy. So big yeah, fan.
I've got that written down. Sort of, you mentioned it earlier as well. So it's fine. it is the first question I want to ask is, you've graduated from California, you studied at Berridge Conservatory in Normandy, France, and then the Pig Iron Company in Philadelphia, and then the British American Dramatic Academy in London. So you've gone, you know, back and forth from, you know, everywhere, France, England, and then, you know, in Philadelphia, in California. What's that been like, and why did you travel so, you know, extensively to improve your sort of acting skills?
You know, it's actually really funny because when I was a kid, I was terrified of sleepaway camp. Like the idea of being away from my parents, like, really horrified me. But then when I was like 14, I guess, 14, yeah, probably, my school offered a program to go to Peru to work in a disabled orphanage and live with a host family. Wow. And so I did that, and you got to go on the Inca Trail and, like, you know, camp all the way to Machu Picchu. And then I think that sort of gave me like the traveling bug. And I really loved being able to study and travel. And like, I just felt like I learned so much when I would go explore another culture, when I was also trying to, you know, learn whatever the material was. And that sort of also kicked off like my really enjoying the Spanish language, because then I ended up doing an exchange program in Spain and living with, this isn't even on the IMDb because it has nothing to do with the movie industry, but I ended up living in Spain for a little bit with like a Spanish exchange program. And she lived with me in Philadelphia. We ended up like staying in great touch. So then when I did go to France to do the Berridge Conservatory that you mentioned, I ended up going there for three different summers, and I would go to Spain afterwards to go see my friend who was living in Seville. And I think that like, I just got the traveling bug. I thought it was so amazing to go see other cultures. I loved being able to go to museums and try different foods. Growing up in Philadelphia, it's very cultural for sure. There's you know, a lot to learn. We have the Constitution Center. I always like to say to people who live in America and are from other states, like, you know, you're welcome for the birth of the country, because that was where the Constitution was signed and everything else. So, but you know, it's very different than being in Europe, and I loved Europe and just loved being able to explore, I guess, honestly. I had always wanted to go to USC to study acting because my dad went to USC. And my dad wasn't really into like professional football or anything like that. He was really into college football, and USC was his team because he went to USC. So I grew up watching like Trojan football, and then it turned out that they had a really good acting school. So that was why I wanted to go to USC. And then once I was at USC, there were just a lot of opportunities to be able to study abroad. One of them was in London. And then another was in Belize, where I studied environmental studies. And then I also went back to Madrid to study Spanish again while I was in school there. But what I think was the most interesting was when I did study at the British American Dramatic Academy in London. That was actually, it's funny because you brought up my mom and how like maybe I'd want to run for something. I was leaning towards going to politics at that point because acting just seemed so scary and like it was so tough to make it. But then when I studied in London, it just sort of solidified that there was like nothing else I'd rather do than be in the entertainment industry.
Oh, wow. So so British America Drama Academy, was that Dramatic Academy, sorry. Was that the last sort of school you went to?
Yeah. I take a lot of classes in the LA area and like now over Zoom. So I'm still taking classes. Right now I'm taking classes at Groundlings. I don't know if you've heard of that. But yeah, that would be the last like school conservatory program I went to.
And how old were you at that point?
Actually, I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I did Pig Iron Theater Company, which you brought up, was after I went to London. Okay. That was just the summer after in June. But that was in Philadelphia. But
so the final one, Philadelphia, how old were you?
I was probably 21, yeah.
So by 21, you'd probably traveled more in the world and experienced more than most people have in half a lifetime, maybe even the whole lifetime. Like
super, super lucky. My dad and I are actually always in a competition with each other to see who's been to more countries. The problem is that we end up going to a lot of the same ones together. So like we usually gain simultaneously, but he's beating me right now. It's 38, 35 countries.
Wow. So what is that, his whole life that he's been to those countries?
Yeah.
I mean, so technically you're beating him then. It should be at the age that you're at. And so you're
I'm going to tell him this actually.
You can show him this exact video and show him that no, that doesn't make sense, because you can't compare, you know, he's had a massive head start. So you've got to go, no, you've got to compare with ages. So technically you're smashing it. I mean, that's so incredible to sort of hear. No, go for it. That's so incredible to hear. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on, is because you had these sort of experiences all over the world at such a young age. And you know, I'm 19 years old. So you were 21 when you'd done all this sort of thing. All these sort of things, and I almost envy you the sort of experiences that you had. And one of the things that you mentioned that's not on your bio, it was, is about how you went to Peru. That was the first sort of thing. So I want to sort of go back to that. And it was at an orphanage center or something. did you say, or something
yeah,
like
so
that?
Yeah, so I lived with a host family, but I was working at a disabled orphanage and yeah, taking Spanish intensive classes. And then we had the opportunity to go hike the Inca Trail to get to Machu Picchu.
Oh, okay. So what was that like? What do you feel like you learned from that experience in Peru? Because that's such an incredible thing. And I think from there, you can sort of appreciate, you know, so much more when you see it firsthand.
Yeah, it was really amazing, honestly. I think that I just loved being able to see other cultures and to meet different types of people. I think there's no better way for sure to learn a language than immersing yourself in the mm-hmm. culture. So that was really incredible to see. Honestly, I wish that like I had gone to Machu Picchu later in life to be able to appreciate it, because mm-hmm. I just don't think that I appreciated it to the degree that I would now. I remember being like, will there be cell phone service in Machu Picchu? Aww. Because you're like hiking there and you know, you're gone for like 4 days or so. So mm-hmm. I was ready to like text and talk to my parents. You're thinking, you know, it's like a 14-year-old high school yeah, girl
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah.
But I would definitely not have that reaction to it now. I also remember like doing everything we can to go to like grocery stores to get Coca-Cola and Oreos, because I was just like not ready to eat that sort of food. And now I'd be going crazy over it. And I seek out like Peruvian restaurants in the LA area. So I think like it was amazing and it gave me the travel bug. But I don't think I appreciated it to the extent that I would had I done it when I was a bit older.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be fair, I think anyone, especially not only at that young age, but also having not traveled yeah. before, like having not yeah. traveled before that, that's sort of your reaction. And for me personally, I can't wait to get to that stage where I'm a lot older, I've traveled a lot more, and then I'm now fully, because I feel like when I first sort of travel, I'm still going to try and keep my comfort zone, essentially like how you were when yeah. you were 14. But I can't wait to, yeah. you know, get to 30, 35, 40, having gone to so many other countries, and then go, you know what, I'm not going to go to the shop. I'm going to actually get the proper food from whichever country yeah. I'm in. I'm going to proper immerse myself, because it's important yeah. to do that. You learn so much more by doing that. And it's less of a holiday yeah. and more of an experience.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel the exact same way. And I think it's a lot easier for Americans who go to London, you know, because you already know language and everything. Mm. It's not that complicated for you to figure out, as opposed to going to a different country where you don't speak the language.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I want to go to America, so I can just order food and just be able yeah. to order it. Like that, you know, I can yeah. just say, can I have a, I mean, they might struggle to understand me. They might be like, hey, what are you on about? Where are you from? I mean, I'm sure they'll understand it. One of the sort of things I've always been intrigued about is so many people sort of say it, people that have been in America and in England, they sort of say that you can actually sometimes feel the difference between the two countries. Now I look at it and I sort of go, well, how can it be that much different? What would you sort of say as someone that's studied here, you know, stayed here in London, in the capital, what would you say is sort of the biggest difference between maybe not America and England, but America and Europe?
Huh. America and Europe. I think that the people in Europe are a lot more polite, for sure. I think that there's more apologies if you bump into each other on
yeah,
the street
we do that
than
all the time.
In the U.S. Yeah. If you're in New York, you'd be like, watch where you're going. You know, you would be the problem. In Europe, I feel like everybody's apologizing to each other. And of course, in Europe, it varies so much country by country, you know, but there's definitely more manners. For sure, the portions are much bigger in the U.S. I think the U.S. is just like everything has been made like super convenient in a way, you know, like we just don't have to like work too hard to like if you want a slice of pizza, it's on every block. If you need to go to a grocery store, like you can find one pretty easily. I think in Europe, like there's more historical sites that have been preserved and therefore like it's not as convenient the way the US is. And I'm not sure that that's a good thing at all, you know, but that's just one of the things that I know.
There are benefits and disadvantages, I guess, to both. I mean,
exactly.
Like America sort of, I can understand the sort of point that you're making is, you know, because America is a lot more modern than the other countries in terms of the history.
Yeah.
Like, the history of England goes way, way, way back compared to America.
Yeah, exactly.
And America's sort of almost artificially grown, whilst England, Britain, Europe, they've sort of grown naturally over thousands
right.
and thousands of years. And I think that's probably why there's that convenience level. But like you said, there's sort
right.
of always advantages and disadvantages to that. Now, to sort of get on, I mean, we sort of talked more about American England, so I apologize for that, because, I mean, I got you on because obviously you've got so much experience in acting. You're an actress, you're a director, like you said, and you've won awards. So you won an award at the California Women's Festival, I think it was, or Women's Film Festival, I think it was, and it was for It's a Girl Thing, which I think you directed. Is that right?
I wrote and produced it and starred in it.
So what's the difference between producing and writing, producing and directing?
So when you're a producer, you sort of do all the logistics for everything. Like, you know, you say, I think this person should be cast. I think that we should film in this location. I think we need a cinematographer. When you're the director, you're explaining to the actors, like, the choices that you think that they should be making in their acting. And, like, you sort of have a vision for how it should look, and you're more involved with the cinematographer, like, on shot by shot. Like, if you and I, let's say, are filming a movie right now, and there's a cinematographer, the director would say, I want you to have an over-the-shoulder shot of Lauren speaking on the... whereas a producer wouldn't have, like, a role in that. They would just be advising on all the logistics for the project and, like, sort of helping to get it made.
Ah, okay, okay. So, like, they're more into, like, the specifics of every single frame and getting that sort of right, in a sense.
Yeah, in a, like, telling the story, yeah.
Hmm. I mean, so, yeah, like I said, like, you've won awards, you've been nominated for multiple awards too, but you also starred in many different plays. One of the sort of highlight pieces that you starred in was Murder Loves Company. And that was, would you consider that as your sort of breakthrough, or that is just sort of into some that was in, because I think, was it on some sort of channel or something like that?
Yeah, it was on the Investigation Discovery Network, and that was definitely a really amazing experience. I remember it was like, it's actually a really funny story if you want the background on it. So
I also
I work as an editor at a Spanish publishing company. So, like, in the US, there's these, you guys are so lucky in Europe where it's, like, very common that everybody knows multiple languages. In the US, like, most schools are just, you learn English. So I work as an editor basically to create more programs where you learn multiple languages. So you have, like, for example, math in Spanish, you have social studies in Spanish. Like, it's not just you're learning every class in English. And I was supposed to be at a conference in New Mexico when I got the audition to do that project. And my boss was basically like, you cannot miss this conference. Like, you will have to find somebody else to replace you if you want to go do that audition. And I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? So I was asking, like, a million people to, like, go take my place at this conference, like, my intern at the time, just anybody I could find to try to take my place at this conference. And the only person who was willing to do it was actually my boyfriend. So my boyfriend flew to New Mexico. I was in New Mexico. I did, like, the first day of the conference. He flies to New Mexico. He pretends to be me, basically, at this conference. He can't speak a word of Spanish. So he had, like, nothing useful to say, but he sat there. Yeah. And he's in sales. He has nothing to do with the industry, but he sat there. And I flew to LA for 24 hours and did the audition, flew back to New Mexico. And when I got back to New Mexico, I learned that I had booked the role.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, that must be such a hectic, because at that point, because it's an audition, it's not a guaranteed thing. Whilst this conference is a guaranteed thing. Like, it's so important. Your boss is telling you, no, you need to go to it. And so it's almost a sort of decision between, well, do you go with your brain or do you go with your heart? Like, that sort of conflict. So did you
somehow
know immediately?
My heart always seems to win out.
Yeah. So did you know immediately that was like, nah, I'm going to this audition? Like, was that sort of, I'm going to this audition. I just need to find someone to take my place.
I think that I felt like I was going to move hell or high water to get to that audition, because at the time that was such, like, a major opportunity for me that I really just, like, did not want to miss out on that opportunity.
Brilliant. So at the conference, was your boyfriend just meant to sit there and, like, not just make sure that he's there?
That's brilliant, I think that he was supposed to say a little bit more than what he said, but you know, his darndest. Yeah, just anything that he could muster up.
Oh, but... okay. Fair enough. You should have. Oh, see, if you knew me, I would 100% taken a trip to wherever you wanted me to go, if it meant that I got to just go and see some random place in the world and just get out of where I currently am. Not that there's
so next
wrong.
Time you're gonna be the one that I call.
100%. If you need someone to fly somewhere, like, as long as you're paying for my ticket, I'll go. I'll be more than happy to go. It would be brilliant. And okay. I'm a professional waffler as well. Okay, I don't know if you know. Have you ever heard the term waffle?
No.
So
no.
when you're waffling, it basically means you're just talking a load of rubbish to sort of fill up the time.
Okay, great.
So in that set, so like in that conference, say your boyfriend was asked, oh, do you mind just giving some words? And he was just like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to say. I could go into that position and go, right, I know what I'm going to do, and just waste 5 minutes talking
nonsense.
See,
I need someone like you. You're what I've been missing.
Exactly. Yeah. See, we can help each other. Yeah. I help.
We can make a deal here. Yeah.
This is brilliant. Exactly. And I'll do it for you if you run for Parliament or if you run for Congress as well.
Okay. So, I'm down to run for Parliament if they'll take me.
Exactly. I mean, well, in America, you have to be an American citizen to run for president. Do you have to be the same to run for Congress? Do you have to be American born?
I don't know the answer to that, honestly. I'm pretty sure that for Congress you don't have to be, but I don't know the facts.
Because to be president, you've got to be born in America. I know that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think in England you have to be born in England. I'm not too sure now. You probably do, and I'm studying politics, so I should know the answer to this. but I can't remember. But I mean, if you go for Congress, I'll help you. I'll be your co-campaign manager with your mum. It'll be great.
Great. Okay.
I'll be a speechwriter. Oh my God, that is like the job. I'm great at writing speeches because it's just a load of waffle. It's brilliant. Anyway, we're getting distracted again. I'm really enjoying this though. I hope everyone who's listening is enjoying it as well. So like back to acting, which is why I got you on. You've done so much, like I sort of said, when it comes to acting, you've won awards, you've starred in sort of different plays, different pieces. I've got a lot of friends that are doing acting right now, either studying it or they're you know, sort of doing the plays here and there and just trying to get more and more experience. What sort of advice would you give to those young people or young actors / actresses?
Honestly, stick with it. Like, if you really care about it and it's hard for you to imagine yourself doing something else, then just continue on, because I don't think it's always the most talented person who, you know, succeeds and does really well. I think a lot of the times it's just the person at the end of the day who was the last person standing and just wouldn't give up on it.
Brilliant. So it's like just sort of persevering, like it's essentially like the story that you just said about that conference, just sort of going,
yeah.
Even though the smart decision technically is to just go to the conference, you know, that's where you're getting, you know, your money from, your experience, whatever. You went for that audition because you said, no, I'm going to, like, you said it yourself, you'd move higher hell water to get to that audition because you were so willing to work hard for it.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same with sort of anything, not just acting or being an actress or anything.
Right.
I also want to ask you a lot about, and I found this really interesting, is you, we mentioned it earlier, is you sort of mentioned how your mum's a social activist, and you're sort of the same as well. Like, you've got a huge sort of interest in feminism. You've also got an interest in Latinx, I think it is, and LGBTQ issues. My first question, actually, before that, is what is Latinx? Because I've never heard this before.
So it's basically like people describe Hispanic people as like Latina or Latina, and it's sort of like genderizing the name. So in order to be inclusive of all genders, you just say Latinx, and that way, like, you're not making it feminine and you're not making it masculine.
Oh, okay, okay, all right, okay, fair enough. So have you got some sort of Latin heritage or?
No, I actually don't, but because I started speaking Spanish and then got involved in the dual language field in the US, it sort of just like happened to me. And then I became really passionate about Latinx representation on film and in the entertainment industry. And it sort of just snowballed from there.
Ah, okay. Okay. So back to that question, back to sort of the social activism element, what made you so, I mean, you've answered the Latinx bit, but the LGBTQ and just in general, like feminism and all these sort of different movements, what sort of brought about that interest for you and why are you so passionate about it essentially?
I think for me, like, I just realized that the entertainment industry and my role in the entertainment industry could mean so much more, because I think that representation is just so important. And whether it's, you know, seeing people that look like you in film or TV, or seeing people who look like you writing those film or TV shows, or directing those film or TV shows, or producing those film and TV shows, just having the representation of diversity just makes such a difference in the quality of whatever it is that you're watching or working on. So I think for me, I became passionate about those because I could just see the impact of it. And it just made all of the work that I was doing so much more fulfilling.
It's an interesting sort of thing, being sort of an actor. Because I don't know why I have this feeling, but I have a feeling that in the acting world and in film and theatre, they don't necessarily want someone that's got those, they don't want to have to deal with that. It almost feels like extra baggage to them, because what if they say somewhat controversial and then it ruins the whole project? Is that true in the acting world? Is activism and being part of that sort of, or being part of any movement, potentially sort of career damaging?
The industry has changed a lot. It used to be, you know, very white, telling like similar stories, but then I think as time continued, and I'm sure you're aware of like the racial justice movement that just happened in the US, it really has adjusted that I think that the networks are looking for a lot more shows and looking for a lot more people that come from different backgrounds. I think that people are starting to realize like how much better it just makes everything. So now I think it's becoming a lot more accepting, but because like it does dictate so much of the way society views, you know, really everything, I think that it's just adjusting, but I think it's definitely on the upward slope.
So to continue on from that question, you sort of mentioned how it's important to have a multicultural element of it. And I think, especially here in the UK and in the rest of Europe, there is a lot of multiculturalism. But the sort of argument on the other side, I guess, on the other extreme side of things, is that the white person is almost being pushed out. And by trying to be extremely multicultural, you are pushing white people out, because essentially now white people don't look good on TV. We need brown people, we need blue people, we need this gender, we need that, you know, we need everything. We need disabled people, etc. We need minorities on. So as a white person with no sort of, you've not got, I hate to use this word, but you've not got a minority card to play. So, because you are a white person, even though you're passionate about these sort of subjects, what sort of, do you fear that you could potentially be, again, damaging your own career by pushing for more multiculturalism in the film industry? And how are you going to sort of try and go, well, yeah, we want multiculturalism, but that doesn't mean that a white person shouldn't get a certain role or a white person shouldn't get a certain job? Do you know what I'm trying to say here? It's a hard question. Yeah. I've just sort of come up with it.
Honestly, I don't worry about it at all, because I think that like I'm creating so many projects to create opportunities for lots of other people, including myself. And honestly, like there's such a need for content now. We have so many other networks. It used to just be like, you're either making a movie or you're trying to be on a show on like ABC or CBS, whatever. But now it's like, we have Netflix, we have Hulu, there was Quibi for a time, like Disney Plus is a thing. There's just so much content out there that I think that there's a space for everyone, and there should be a space for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I started this podcast. Like, I know there's a million podcasts out there, but I think that if I can create something that's, you know, 30 minute long, there can be someone out there that might be interested in hearing. They're interested in hearing an actress's perspective. They're interested in hearing, you know, Peter Wright's perspective, someone that I had on previously. They're interested in hearing a CEO's perspective, etc.
Yeah.
And that's why I created it, that exact reason. And I just sort of wanted to ask you more about that sort of element of it. So speaking of content and podcasts, you, as mentioned at the beginning, have your own podcast in Damsel in the DM, which is a brilliant name, by the way. I'm still struggling to come up with a proper name for mine. I don't like the name for mine is Me, Myself, and Hopefully You podcast, which it makes sense because it's about me getting to know you and understanding the guest and et cetera. But I still want a better name. So what's Damsel in the DMs about?
So it's a modern dating podcast, and my co-host Chloe originally selected me for the podcast. She was sort of looking to do something about like what it's like to be in the dating world and you know, all of the trials and tribulations that go along with it. I've had my boyfriend for 5 years now, and she was sort of going through the dating world herself. So thank you.
I don't know if you meant to say congratulations to that, but yeah.
No. I appreciate it. I think that he's more useful to me than I am to him, but I'm glad that he keeps me along for the ride. But anyway.
You forced him to go all the way to some conference that he had no idea about. So I guess, yeah, maybe he is. No, I'm joking.
He is. No, it's okay. He will be helping me tape 4 auditions after we have this call. So he's very useful and very lucky.
Fair play to him.
But no, so it was nice because we had 2 different perspectives, and I had a lot of like traumatic dating experiences when I was growing up. So, you know, I could offer horror stories and then talk about how I've been able to turn that into something that's been pretty successful. So it mostly goes, we do have guests on like this every week. And we talk about like whether they've been in the entertainment industry, since both Chloe and I are in the entertainment industry, or whether it's like just their dating life. We have a lot of dating coaches on. So really just like sort of goes the spectrum between personal dating lives and dating advice.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, it sounds really interesting. I love that sort of casual, because I love sort of different podcasts. I love the sort of learning podcasts, which are, you know, about like the Joe Rogan podcast, where he gets a guest on and just learns more about them and they have inspiring stories. But I also love this casual podcast where I can learn stuff here and there. I mean, I've never dated before. I don't plan on dating anytime soon. I mean, I'm too ugly today anyway. But
No, not true.
I'll take that as a compliment. What was I saying? Yeah, so like, I mean, it's just sort of interesting to hear. I mean, I listen to a few podcasts out like that sort of have... They send in their dilemmas and stuff, which is always sort of interesting to hear. But I'll definitely check that one out, and I'll leave the link in the description as well, because it seems quite interesting. Did you come up with the name, or did your co-host come up with the name?
I did come up with the name. I was going to tell you, if you need name help, names are kind of my thing. I like coming up with names. Yeah.
It's another way where we can help each other. You can give me you give me names. It'll be brilliant.
Okay, great. We'll work on it.
We're definitely going to have a chat about the names for this podcast, because I have no idea. How did you come up with that? Because it's a brilliant name, Damsel in the DMs. It's
great. One, it was good alliteration. 2, we were looking for something that sort of like referenced how we do the letter and that sort of thing. So it made sense because it like referenced like being modern dating, since everybody connects like through DMs and that sort of thing now. And then damsels, because like people have the connotation of like damsels in distress, like people looking for help, and people write in letters like seeking help from us onto the podcast. So it just made sense.
So, I mean, this is just sort of so random, right? But I'm just intrigued. What advice would you give to someone during the pandemic when it comes to dating?
When it comes to dating, like they're looking to meet someone?
But in the pandemic?
My advice, I mean, in terms of like using online dating and, you know, doing the Zoom dating or whatever it is, I think it is just like to honestly be nice to yourself and don't put any pressure on yourself to meet somebody. I was always somebody, I've actually never been on a dating app before. They just weren't like as popular 5 years ago. So I think that it's really important that you don't put pressure on yourself to meet someone. I think that people put too much pressure on like, oh, you have to have somebody. Being in a relationship is the most important thing. That's the end goal. I think for me, like career was always more important. And
that's what I want to hear.
Thank you. And I don't think that, you know, that's the same for everybody, but I do think that like, if that is your priority, you shouldn't feel embarrassed or ashamed that that's your priority. I don't think that everybody needs a partner. And I think for me and my boyfriend, like one of the things that makes it work is that we're both very independent. He actually lives in New York and I live in LA. And even before that, he lived like an hour away. And that was always okay because we just like lived our independent lives and we just didn't need each other all the time.
See, I like that, because especially that end part, because there is a sort of common theme, especially amongst young people. And I've got friends who've had this problem, is they get extremely needy, which is a good thing to be needy, because you're sort of more romantic, you know, you love each other more, blah, blah, blah. But then you become so needy that person dictates your happiness. And over the last sort of year or so, I've sort of come to the realization that I need to dictate my own happiness. I can't I can't depend on someone else. Like, it's too valuable for me to depend on someone else. And that, I mean, that's just sort of my thinking around that. I just don't see the point of, if you're at the point in any sort of relationship where you message them and you ask them, oh, do you want to go here? And then they go, no. And then all of a sudden you start, then that in itself is a problem. You need to be comfortable in your own self to be able to do whatever you want on your own or with someone else.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that my follow-up question for like, sort of the next sort of quick question I want to ask you is, I mean, that's quite far away though, like as in from New York to where you are, to Philadelphia. Is that how far?
New York to Philadelphia is actually only an hour and a half. But when I'm in LA, you know, then it's much further, like a 5-hour plane ride.
How do you make that work? I'm just intrigued. I'm being nosy. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, you're not being nosy. I don't know. I literally talk about it every week on a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
You're the least nosy. Yeah, you don't have to worry. Honestly, it's fine. When the pandemic started, I came home pretty early to Philadelphia to stay with my parents and sort of babysit them and keep them company while the pandemic was starting, because I was really worried about them and really didn't want them to do anything at all. But it actually made our relationship easier because he was living in New York, which is only an hour and a half away. So we were able, like, New York was the epicenter of the pandemic for a while in the US. So not in the beginning, but like as testing became more available, we could start seeing each other more. So that was really great. But then like when I am in LA, because I have gone back to LA since the pandemic started, just like, you know, to film a couple projects here and there, but have mostly been stationed in Philadelphia. I would say that it's been like, obviously, like distance is difficult in terms of managing like time zones and everything. But because we are like pretty independent in our own lives, it hasn't been very challenging. And honestly, like I haven't even noticed it too much because like, even when I'm in Philly, that's still an hour and a half. We're still not in the same place. You're still not going to just go over for dinner, you know? So I think it's mostly been okay. And I think as long as you have like your own social network and your own friends and, you know, your own things to do and things that keep you passionate, then you don't need the other person all the time.
Yeah,
if you're that type of person. I know other people are not like this and want somebody to be with them all the time, but yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's a difference between wanting that person to be nearby and close, etc. But then that and, you know, someone that literally dictates your happiness, which I mean, I think having that sort of distance and different time zones and not being able to just go, oh, I'm gonna go to my boyfriend's or I'm gonna go to my girlfriend, that sort of just helps a bit more.
Right.
I mean, I think it's a great thing. It's quite cute as well. It's like your lovers from a distance. It's great. I think I saw a picture of you on your Instagram. I can't remember now. I think it was
probably did.
It was quite cute. I was like, oh, this is nice. I just thought. Just a quick question again, sorry, before I ask the final question. Is America such a big place? And it's always, I mentioned this earlier, it's always intrigued me, America, and I do want to go. I definitely want to go. Is America, you know how, I don't know if you know, but like how other people view America as this big, you know, huge place with loads of different people. And, you know, America, you know, there's that, sorry, it's that stereotype that Americans think America is the greatest country in the world. I mean, I guess everyone sort of thinks their own country is the greatest country in the world. Would you say, in your personal opinion, that America is the greatest country in the world?
No.
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 See,
but
this
I think
is the controversial thing. Boom! I've got it. I'm clipping this up.
No. I think it's really, really great, but I think it is on its way back. That's what I'll say. I think that we had a 4-year little.
Oh, a dig at someone there.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a 4-year problem, we'll say. And I think that we are on the come up and we're on the up and up. And I'm really grateful that diversity is back in the White House. Dogs are back in the White House. we're doing things that like joining the Paris Climate Agreement again, repealing the Muslim ban. I think there's a lot of things that we are now like on our way to getting back to where we used to be. But I mean, if you had asked me this in October, I would have told you like definitely not. Now I'm feeling a little bit like, you know, more happy about it, but especially with like the racial justice movement and everything that came to light with all of the police brutality, I think that, you know, it just showed that America has a lot of work to be doing and we're not that like this big power that we once thought we were. And because I've been able to travel, I've been able to see like how so many other countries are so incredible. And, you know, London is a melting pot in itself, for sure. So I think that it's just like when you are able to get out of America, you're able to see like how great other places in the world are, and it gives you perspective just like anything. But I am grateful that our little four-year problem has come to an end and that we are working towards being better.
I love how you described that. Yeah, you're not mentioning any specific, just our little four-year problem. That was a great answer. You saved yourself. I rate that. You did save yourself that. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to clip it and make sure it stays at like that 10 seconds
where you said
America isn't the greatest country in the world. And then when you run to become senator of Philadelphia or whatever, I'm going to be like, look, she doesn't even think America's the greatest country in the world. Why would you vote for her? I'm going
to
do that.
I can't believe this negativity came up in this podcast after how nice I've been to you.
I know. After I get, if you help me with the names and you take me to a conference, then I'll delete the clip. Well, I mean, if you don't, then I'm sending that clip out in 8 years' time. I just love how you describe the four-year problem. I don't know why I find that funny. My final question, and I'm sorry this has been so heavily America-based. Like I said, I'm just intrigued by America. And you, that's, again, another reason why I started this podcast. Yes, I'm intrigued by people, what they do for a living and their passions. But I want to know more about them and help them get to know more about themselves. Yeah. And in that sense, I want to learn more about me. My final question is, and it's normally probably a better question to ask someone that's 50, 60 or 70, but I'm going to ask you anyway, because you've had so many experiences. As a 26-year-old now, you're on the come up, you're doing some great things, you've won awards, etc. You've taken part in some amazing pieces, and hopefully there's more to come. What advice would you give to sort of 18, 19, 17-year-olds right now in the pandemic, maybe not actors and actresses, but just in general, just living life and maybe struggling a bit with what the future holds?
I think that you are better than you think you are. I think when you're 17, 18, or 19, like, it's so easy to be so hard on yourself and so just self-critical. And I remember thinking about when I was 17 or 18 or 19, I couldn't imagine like doing the things that I've been able to do now. And so much of it is just like not being able to believe in yourself. But honestly, just being able to say like, why not me? Like, why shouldn't it be me? Or why shouldn't I try? Just having that belief in yourself, I think, allows you to accomplish so much. And that's, I think, the best advice that I could have given myself when I was 17, 18 or 19.
And that is it for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Be sure to check out Lauren's podcast in the description below. They have just finished season one, and so you've got a few weeks to catch up. It's really enjoyable to listen to great advice, and very similar to the Girls Bathroom podcast, but less dilemmas and more sort of proper advice. Not that the Girls Bathroom doesn't have proper advice, but you know what I mean. Basically, I'm just trying to cover myself just in case I get to go in the Girls Bathroom one day. Hopefully. Probably never happen. Anyway, if you did enjoy this episode of the Me, Myself and Hopefully You podcast, be sure to give us a review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts, so that you don't miss out on next week's episode. Yes, next week is a very, very interesting episode, because I sit down with Diego Varela, a man who's born with an extremely rare heart condition in Argentina as well, so not the best health support there, and told to never run again, but then proceeded to complete five half marathons. You definitely don't want to miss that one. And if you made it till the end of the podcast, let me know by tagging me.myself.and.hopefully.you.podcast. I really need to change that username, because it's way too long for anyone to remember. But if you do have the time, then tag us on me.myself.and.hopefully.you.podcast. By dot, I mean a full stop, on Instagram, and sharing us on your story. Until next time.